Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. I'm your host, Hayden Grove, joined, as always, by our Cavaliers beat reporter, Chris Fedor. And a couple days ago, the Cavaliers had pretty far odds of getting a top pick in this NBA draft. I think it was 97.5% from getting the number one, or 97.5% that they were going to get the number 14 pick, and that's exactly what happened. Ping pong balls didn't necessarily go against Cleveland's favor, but they certainly didn't go in Cleveland's favor. So Cleveland now officially has the 14th pick overall. And Chris, we've discussed this a lot in terms of, you know, before we get into like what they're going to do with the pick and all that. Obviously, it was a Hail Mary for them to get anything other than the 14th pick. We've talked a lot about, you know, getting playoff experience over number 14. And, you know, looking back at it, I think the playoff experience 100% would have been a lot better. But they had, you know, some serious injuries and some, you know, some growing pains that they went through down the stretch, and it didn't allow them to get that experience. So here they are sitting with number 14.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to put it, Hayden, is it's a consolation prize. Obviously, there was the frustration and the pain for the Cavs that they had to deal with immediately after losing both playing games against Brooklyn and Atlanta. But I think then Kobe Altman, Mike Gansey, Brandon Williams, all of them were able to take a step back and say, hey, look, like part of the reason why we put the protections on the Caris LeVert trade package that we did was because in case something like this happened. So I think when they took a step back, they were like, hey, look, we've got an opportunity to add to this roster. We understand how we have to build this thing. We understand how we have to grow this organization. It's not going to be in free agency. It's got to be shrewd trades, and it's got to be hitting on draft picks. And this gives them another opportunity, another path, Hayden, this offseason. It's a critical offseason. We've talked about it. This gives them a path to add to this team. Not only that, I mean, I think the 14th pick in this year's draft, while it's not a great position to be in because it's not considered a great draft, the players that they could be looking at, there are guys there that bring something to the Cavs that they don't currently have on the roster. And I think that's always the goal for a rebuilding team like the Cavs, is to go out every single offseason, identify your flaws, and see what is the best path towards fixing those. And 14 is not going to be Evan Mobley, right? 14's not going to be...
Oh, you never know.
Sure, yeah. It could be Kawhi Leonard. It could be Giannis. It could be right. Rudy Gobert and some of these other guys that have been taken beyond number 14. Chances are it's not going to be like a significant piece of this core, but I think it can be a helpful piece and a rotation piece that's going to boost their depth. And we saw towards the end of last season, depth was an issue for this team.
Yes, it certainly was. You almost got into it a little bit, and I want to get into it. You know, this is kind of the basis of what we're going to pod about today. But your piece, your latest is, or not your latest, there you wrote a piece on Evan Mobley being unanimously selected as NBA All-Rookie First Team. We can get into that a little bit. I mean, you know, a tremendous rookie year to him, and maybe we can get into that a little later. But I think we know that Evan Mobley's a foundational piece. It's just about getting better from the three-point line, getting stronger, all that good stuff for him. But he definitely deserved that honor. But your second latest piece is the 2022 NBA draft represents Cleveland Cavaliers' best chance to fill greatest need. And then your little subtext or your little sub headline is their offseason has two paths. They're easy to see and yet tricky to execute. If done properly, perhaps they may intertwine. So what are their two paths? How do they intertwine?
Well, I think to me, the two paths are it's playmakers and wings. And that's the goal for the Cavs. That's their offseason mantra. And what I mean by the path is that what they do in the draft is going to affect what they do in free agency and potential trades. And what, so I think they have to identify, this is a long road, but I think they have to identify realistically, and this is hard to do because things can change quickly in the NBA, but this is what their job is. That's why they have so many strategy people in their front office. They have to look at who could potentially be available in a trade aid. And they have to look at who could potentially be available in free agency. And they have to say to themselves, okay, is that where we get our wing? Right? Or they have to look at that and say, is that where we get our playmaker, our backup point guard, to play alongside Darius Garland at times and to back up Darius at times so we don't run him into the ground the way that we did the past couple of years. And if they believe that trade or free agency is their path to a wing, then I think they would have to target playmaker, backup point guard in the draft. If they feel like backup point guard playmaker is more realistic in free agency trade, which is what I think is going to end up being the case, then I think they have to target the highest upside two-way wing to try and fix that position long-term. And I just think in today's NBA, two-way wings are gold. You can't win without one. It's kind of like a quarterback in the NFL. Yep. And they're very, very difficult to get. They rarely hit free agency, and the teams that have them, either it would be too costly for the Cavs to acquire them in a trade, or the teams that have them aren't going to trade them because they need those wings. So to me, I think their best path in the draft is going to be the two-way wing at number 14. If it happens to be a playmaker, like somebody who can make plays for himself, make plays for others, create shots for himself, create shots for others, then that would be great. Get a playmaking wing. That would be outstanding. But I think if we look at the offseason and what's probably available to the Cavs and the assets that they have in a potential trade, I think they're going to really sharpen their focus when it comes to the 14th pick on guys that can play the 2/3 spot as opposed to the 1/2.
So obviously the easier of the two options is getting a playmaker, backup point guard kind of thing. I mean, with number 14, I think they're definitely looking at, you know, every possibility of packaging it in a trade, possibility of, you know, of just picking a player. So
yeah,
is there a situation in which they have to trade number 14 for one and then they don't, then they have to kind of use something else to get the other? I mean, I think that's kind of the only way to make it work. Like you said, you know, if they trade the number 14 for a backup point guard, then they're going to have to try to find a wing somehow, some other way, some other how, or, you know, some other way. So it's just a matter of. Like,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I don't think they have to trade 14, or I don't think they have to trade the player's rights after drafting whoever it is at 14. I think, If we're talking about trying to trade for a playmaker or a point guard or a wing, whatever the case may be, like I think what the Cavs have to do is they have to outline the trade assets that they have and see what's going to bring them back the most. And to me, the 14th pick, the last pick of the lottery, has very, very little value. Yeah. I was looking at this a couple of different times in the last week, Hayden. The last time that I can remember, like, a player for 14 swap in the NBA was the Indiana Pacers and the San Antonio Spurs. Now, like, it turned out to be Kawhi Leonard going to San Antonio, but nobody knew Kawhi was going to be Kawhi at that point in time.
Right.
And all Indiana got was George Hill. So it's not an all-star caliber player, right? It's just like confident NBA rotational player. So like, how much does that really help the Cavs if they use the 14th pick or the player that they get with the 14th pick to get the seventh or eighth guy in a rotation that has limited upside or less upside than the pick that they could use at 14. So if I'm talking about trying to make a trade in terms of the Cavs, the 14th overall pick is further down that list than, say, Colin Sexton, Lauri Markkanen, if they want to go that way, Caris LeVert, Isaac Okoro. I just don't see, personally, in terms of trade value, I just don't see the number 14 pick moving the needle a lot for the kinds of players that they would want to acquire.
Like, right.
We talked about it in the last podcast, right? I brought up Mike Conley.
Mm-hmm.
What does the 14th pick do for Utah? you know what I mean? A team that wants to win right now and they want to be competitive around Donovan Mitchell. It's hard to sell Utah on that really helping them. It's easier to sell Utah on Isaac Okoro or Caris LeVert or Lauri Markkanen. You know what I mean? And right. Then if you're talking about the Cavs trying to go like bigger than that, bigger than the Conley types, I think a future first round pick obviously is going to have more value around the league than like the 14th pick. So I think at this point in time, Hayden, the best path for the Cavs is to draft at 14 and keep that guy and make it a two-way wing or a potential two-way wing that they can groom and develop the kind of piece that they don't have on this roster.
So, I mean, pardon my pun, but you're basically saying that it's, you know, it's a lottery ticket. It's a lottery pick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like that's, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it is. You know, you're not looking at number 14 as a guy that's, you know, going to be a huge part of your rotation going forward. Or, I mean, you hope he is, but you're not planning on that happening with number 14. But essentially, you're saying that the best option for the Cavs, keep 14, draft the player 14, as opposed to maybe packaging in a deal or trying to just get something one-on-one.
Well, I think the guy can be a part of the rotation moving forward, maybe even in year one, depending on who it is at 14. But right. But I think if we're looking at this to be a core piece similar to Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, Darius Garland, the odds of that are a lot longer, especially, you know, given some of the guys that they could be looking at number 14. You see competent quality players, but I don't know that I see star potential, like building block type guy.
Well, I guess that's my point, is that like, is there a situation in which maybe the Cavs can try to go after that two-way wing with Colin Sexton with in that pick, or with Isaac Okoro on that pick, or with Jetty Osman in the pick, and then just try to find a back, as opposed to just taking that lottery pick and seeing, you know, if it's a lottery or if it's a, you know, if it works out for them.
Well, I think the other benefit of getting a lottery pick here and drafting and keeping the guy is the cost control element here. The mm-hmm. Cavs roster, Hayden, is going to get pricey. It's going to get pricey soon. They're already very, very cognizant going into this offseason of the luxury tax. They know that they could re-sign Colin Sexton, they could use the full mid-level exception, and they could draft somebody at number 14. And doing all of that, they have about a $21 million buffer below the luxury tax. So they have to be cognizant of that. And some of the players that you're talking about, the more established wings in the NBA, they make between $18 and $30 million annually.
Right.
The Cavs are going to give, more than likely, a max extension to Darius Garland. The Jared Allen contract extension is kicking in. Obviously, Kevin Love's coming off the books, but then Evan Mobley is going to get a big contract in the near future. Who knows what's going to happen with Colin Sexton? Caris LeVert, there's a conversation that the Cavs have to have there. Lauri Markkanen makes about $15 million annually. So the benefit of drafting that two-way wing that's not currently on the roster at 14 is how much that would cost them for the next 3 to 5 years. it fits a lot better with their salary cap situation. The other thing to bring up here, and it would be great, right, if the Cavs could go out and trade for somebody like Brandon Ingram. That's not realistic. He's not going anywhere. New Orleans is building their franchise around him. So I'm going to give you the list of names that I came up with that could fit the profile. And you tell me how much interest you would have in them, understanding that the cost is going to be really, really high, even though you may think some of these guys are meh, because the archetype is going to determine the cost. And I think the market is going to determine the cost as well. And we know one thing going into this offseason, Hayden, there are very, very few wings that pique anybody's interest in free agency. You could make an argument that going into free agency, the best available wing player might be Kyle Anderson of the Memphis Grizzlies. Maybe Joe Ingles coming off a torn ACL.
Right.
Think about that.
Yep.
Think about those players. That's what free agency could offer. So here are the wings that I came up with. Okay. Bogdan Bogdanovic. Okay. Bojan Bogdanovic. Gordon Hayward. Tobias Harris. Harrison Barnes. Gary Trent Jr. maybe. Aaron Gordon. Jeremy Grant. And this one may or may not be possible, but his contract situation is interesting, and the Warriors have two first-rounders waiting that play the same position in Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody, who they're both invested in. Andrew Wiggins would be my final one, and I think he would be the toughest to get, and I don't think he's as readily available as maybe some of the other guys because of the success that he's had, especially in this postseason run for Golden State. And if Golden State gets to the NBA Finals, they may want to run it back. So of those guys that I mentioned, which one stands out to you that could significantly help the Cavs?
Yeah, I mean, it's not – I mean, there's some interesting names. I mean, I've always been a Tobias Harris fan, but –
Right.
The Bogdanovich is – Go ahead.
Tobias Harris would – a starting point would be Kevin Love.
Yep.
And yep. more.
And more. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wiggins is interesting, but I think you're right. I think it would take a lot, and I think they'd probably want to run it back. The Bogdanoviches, again, both of them, you know, they can play.
Right, I think they help.
Yeah, I think they help, but it's just a matter of, you know, you're right. It's a matter of price. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Right, so I came up with hypothetical trades that I think are more realistic than some of the ones that you see floating out there on the internet.
Oh, hell yeah, Chris. Like, I love the hypothetical trade. It's like my favorite thing. Dude, yes.
So,
Bring it. Wine and Gold Talk Podcast exclusive. Actually.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break. Let's take a 5-second break. Let's let the advertising play, and then on the other side, we will hear your hypothetical trades. So stick with us on the Wine and Gold Talk Podcast. Hypothetical trades coming next. All right, we are back on the Wine and Gold Talk Podcast. We are talking hypothetical trades. Good stuff here. Can't wait to hear what Chris Feudor has come up with for us. So Chris, tell us these hypothetical trades that you have come up with that are better than what you've seen thus far.
All right, so here's one. Would you do this? Atlanta clearly is looking to rejigger the roster. Would you give up Caris LeVert and something, probably a future second round pick, I would think would probably have to be included? That would be my guess. So Caris LeVert and a future second round pick for Bogdan Bogdanovic.
And Colin Sexton stays on the roster?
Yeah, that would be the Cavs picking Colin over Karras.
I would do that. Yeah, I would.
Right.
I would.
See, my only thinking with that is that maybe Atlanta wants more of a driver, more of an attacker to take some ball handling pressure off of Trae Young. And Karras brings that element in a way that Bogdan doesn't.
Right.
And Bogey brings some shooting in a way that Karras doesn't. And the Cavs need shooting desperately.
Yep.
So that would be my first one. The other option would be doing a similar trade with the other Bogdanović, this one from Utah. Would you do that?
It would be, oh, just the same thing with the different.
Thing. Yeah. It would be Karras.
Yeah, I think I would do that too.
Karras,
I mean, I have high hopes for Karras. I do.
Right.
I do have high hopes for Karras, but I just, you know, I don't know. I think that having two similar players in Colin Sexton and Karras LeVert doesn't do a ton for you. I'd rather have, you know, a guy that can play a little bit of a different spot.
Right. And bring a different skill set. I think the Cavs needed what Karras brought to the table, but he didn't actually bring it to the table. In theory, they needed what he brought to the table in the final 2 months and going into the postseason, because he was going to create his own buckets.
Right.
And he was going to drive to the basket. He was going to do some of the things that Colin Sexton did so well that the Cavs were missing from him.
Right.
Now, as we spin it forward, I think the Cavs need more shooting.
Yeah.
Karras, I think, is a career like 33% three-point shooter. So if they could flip him for either a more reliable backup point guard like we've already talked about,
mm-hmm.
or a shooter, a better shooter to give some spacing and some shooting, I think it's something that the Cavs should consider. Here's another one. And this is hard because I think this guy has the game that the Cavs absolutely need, but there are so many injuries. Kevin Love, Gordon Hayward.
Just straight?
I don't know that it would be straight, to be perfectly honest with you. I think maybe the Cavs would have to include something, but it would be a benefit to Charlotte, in theory, to get off of Gordon Hayward's contract and take mm-hmm. Kevin's expiring contract so that they can kind of reset their salary cap situation ahead of, like, LaMelo Ball.
Yeah. I'm going to pass. Because I'm going to pass. And here's why. I just think Gordon, you know, yes, he's been better, but the injuries, I just think Kevin can bring, you know, I think there's a leadership quality and a togetherness and a chemistry and elite, like, that he brings to this Cavs team that they, you know, desperately need. And I don't think that he's that much of a, you know, I don't think Gordon Hayward is that much of an upgrade in terms of, yes, he played differently, but like, you're talking about the sixth man of the year, a really good player off the bench, can shoot the ball. Like, if you were taking, like, if there was a player that the Cavs would match the number better and, you know, had a different skill set, then maybe. I mean, honestly, if you added, like, I would trade Karras LeVert for him, but you would have to add some players from Charlotte or some pieces from Charlotte.
You would also have to add some pieces from the Cavs to make the salary match.
Make salaries because... work, yeah.
Yeah, Hayward makes around $30 million annually.
Yeah.
So here's my thinking on this. And you can't do this, right? But if you ignored the injury history with Gordon Hayward and all of those questions that come with him, and you could just create a player to plop onto this Cavs roster, the skill set of Gordon Hayward would be really, really close to what you would want.
Sure.
You would probably want younger. You would probably want, I don't know, maybe more versatile in terms of how they can attack defenses at this stage of their career. But he can create. He can score at all three levels. He can knock down threes. He can guard threes and fours. That to me is really, really intriguing.
I mean, again, but the problem, like you said, is that you can't ignore injury history. You can't ignore injury.
No, you can't. And you can't ignore contract. That's the other thing. I mean, if you're taking on Gordon Hayward, you're paying him $30 million this year and then $31.5 next year. So you're adding an extra year of salary, where in terms of Kevin Love, you know, his salary comes off the books at the end of next season.
Right.
Okay. Here's another
one. Right. Okay.
Trying to figure out what they would want in a deal, and I'm having a hard time, but but like the salary matches up, and I'm not 100% sure that it's a stylistic fit, but whatever. Let's say Caris LeVert. It has to start with LeVert probably. And then something. Yep. Again, probably a future second round pick or multiple future second rounders for Gary Trent Jr.
I would do it.
He can shoot, he can defend. I mean, we saw how hot he got in the game against the Cavs. And the other thing about him is he's 23 years old. He's more of a two guard. But I think he could probably get away playing some three, maybe, possibly.
Yeah. But he does fit into that kind of youth movement, youth mold that the Cavaliers have right now.
Yeah.
And I love that.
And I mean, again, he's a different kind of player stylistically than Caris LeVert. So maybe, possibly, Toronto would want an attacker like Caris. But I obviously, I don't know the Raptors as well as I know the Cavs, but it would seem like that kind of player, the Caris archetype, is something that the Raptors are missing. And Trent shot 38% from three this past year for Toronto. He's a career 39% three-point shooter. So it would be the Cavs adding, you know, a different element to their team with a shooter.
Let me ask you a question, and maybe this is kind of the crux of the whole thing.
Yeah.
A better trade chip for the Cavs. I mean, is it Caris LeVert? Is it Colin Sexton? Which one would you rather trade? Which one should they trade? Which one do they not want to trade? I mean, I think those two guys essentially are the best trade chips the Cavs have in terms of, you know, players that other teams would want.
I don't know about that.
Okay. Like Darius Garland and all them, but.
No. Like Darius is untouchable. Jarrett's untouchable. Yeah, yeah. Evan's untouchable. But there is part of me that believes because of his age, because of his upside, and because of the development that he has shown, especially in the second half of last season, and the style that he plays, I think Isaac Okoro would have some value to some of these teams.
Okay.
And I think maybe even he hasn't proven as much at the NBA level as Colin or Caris. But lots of teams look at a moldable ball of clay and say, okay, there's a lot of upside there. We'd rather take the swing on that upside than the stability and the known of somebody like Caris. Because here's the thing about Caris. If we're talking about what another team would see if they were acquiring him in a trade, yes, they would see a guy who can go, score, attack the rim. He's got enough size and length to guard twos and threes. But beyond that, Hayden, below that surface is a long list of injuries. He's played one full season in his entire career. A guy who has very, very little in terms of playoff experience. In the games that he has played that have been playoff-like, he has not been very good. And there's a contract situation coming up with him. He could be an unrestricted free agent at the end of next year. So whoever would be acquiring him would either have to be comfortable paying him a new contract immediately or would have to feel good about their chances of re-signing him in free agency if no extension is done.
Right.
And with Colin, it's very similar as well. Is he a starter? Is he a backup? Can he guard his own position? Are we comfortable with an undersized, non-traditional shooting guard? What happened to his three-point shot in the 11 games last year that was so significantly different than the first 2 years of his career? Did he revert back to what we saw coming out of Alabama where there were questions about his shot? Does his style translate to winning basketball? Another question when it comes to Caris LeVert as well. And... Yeah. are we comfortable paying Colin what he's going to want to get paid? So, like,
right.
Those factors are not there with Isaac Okoro. You know what I mean? Like,
no, those factors, you're right.
Those factors are not there with Lauri Markkanen, if we're talking about trade assets that could be appealing right. to other teams. Those factors aren't there with a future first-round pick that could be under control of a team for the next 5 years. So I think if we're being honest about the realistic chips that the Cavs have, that they would actually be willing to give up, even though Karras and Colin have accomplished more, I think that list starts with Isaac Okoro.
Okay. Okay. Well, if it's Isaac Okoro, I mean, that could... That's the thing. I think the Cavs do have tradable assets, and I think that if they wanted to make a significant move, I think they could do that. Like
well, I
you
think
said,
we have to define significant.
Well, I don't think franchise altering is what is the word, but like,
okay,
they can get better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there are opportunities to do that. The question is, what's the cost, and is the cost because these kinds of wings are in such demand? Is the cost going to be too prohibitive?
Right, right. All right, so say, you know, okay, so say the Cavaliers are going to keep number 14 because you seem to think that's the best option. I kind of agree at this point. I mean, you're like you said, like I said, if anything, they would probably have to package it with a player to get, you know, any sort of significant return, but they could also package a future
right.
pick. They could package a second-round pick, whatever. So... Say number 14, just off the top of your head right away. I mean, I know we've looked at the mock drafts and we've looked at different things. What do you think the best option if the Cavaliers were to, I mean, we'll see if they do pick up any, you know, any players or any, have anything happen before, before the draft. But, at this point, where would you be looking? I mean, we've talked about Malachi Branham. We've talked about, adding a backup point guard. I mean,
yeah.
People are looking at the kid from Kansas whose name I have trouble with, so I'm not going to let you say
yep.
it first.
Agbaji.
You know, Agbaji, right. Yeah. So where do you think they're looking right now? Where do you think they could have a good fit at number 14?
I think it starts with Malachi Branham.
Yeah.
I think of the guys available at 14 – he is the one that there would be the greatest consensus on right now.
Yep.
He's more of a two than a three, but he's long, okay? He measured at about 6'5", but he's got a 6'10" wingspan. So that helps. That helps a lot. He can shoot mid-range and three-point range, about 50% from the field, 42% from three-point range. And the thing that I like, 83% from the free throw line, that
yep.
usually translates to a guy continuing to be able to shoot. I've gotten comparisons. One executive compared him to Milwaukee's Chris Middleton.
Nice. Yep.
And the other thing is, like, at times at the end of the season, Branham had to create offense for Ohio State.
Yes,
so he
did.
Showed an ability to create. So I think it starts there, Hayden. But there's another name here that I think is really, really intriguing for the Cavs. I wrote about it more than 2 weeks ago, and then everybody else started talking about him after that. Dyson Daniels, the G League Ignite kid.
Okay.
Dude, he measured 6'7" in shoes. Like, he had a growth spurt this past year of about 2 inches. So we're talking about a super-sized guard who has great defensive chops, that when he puts on a little bit more weight, Hayden, he's probably going to be able to guard threes in the NBA while mostly playing the one or the two on the offensive end because of his style. Now, his shot is not there right now. He shoots at about 25% from three-point range, but a scout that I talked to recently about Daniels that has watched him for a long, long time said that the shot is not broken. It just needs tweaks. And really, like, a lot of these guys have some questions about their shooting that the Cavs could be looking at the number 14 range. So when you get the defense, you get the size, you get the athleticism, you get the vision, and you get the playmaking from Dyson Daniels, like, I'm not going to be focused on the fact that right now, at this stage of his life, he can't shoot threes as good as you would want. So if he's available at 14, and I don't think he's going to be anymore because of his size, like that's really, really intriguing to a lot of teams. But if he was available at 14, I think that would be the guy that the Cavs would take. I just don't think right now he's going to be available at 14. And then beyond that, Agbaji has some fans in the Cavs front office because he is considered by many, Hayden, to be the best shooter of all the options at number 14 and one of the best shooters in the entire draft. And he also is further along on the developmental curve. He's 22 years old. He can probably help right away. And he can defend. He is a rugged, tough defender. Usually took one of the toughest assignments for the Kansas defense when he was on the floor. And I think that's something like the ceiling is not there the way that it is with Branham and Daniels. I've had Agbaji compared to guys like Jay Crowder, a typical 3-and-D guy who can't really create his own offense, but he can knock down open shots if somebody creates those for him. And the Cavs have to figure out, will we have enough shot creation to justify taking him at number 14, or would it be better for us to get somebody who has more of a ceiling as a shooter, yes, a defender, yes, but also more of a shot creator?
Well, I think if the Cavaliers were to get any of those three, I think you could definitely see the positives in any three. I mean, Branham is young. I think, you know, you talk about a growth spurt. I think he's a guy that could be eligible for a growth spurt. I don't know what his biological, I don't know what his biology says, but you know what? I mean, we've seen it happen so many times. Guys grow at 19. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility. And then, you know, if you got Agbaji. Okay, Agbaji. If you get him in the realm, then, or if you get him at 14, then you got a guy that's, you know, older, ready to play more, maybe a little more mature, maybe a little more ready for what the Cavaliers are going to do in trying to get to the playoffs. And then in Daniels, you know, you get a little bit of everything. So I think with those three, yeah, you couldn't go wrong.
And there's another one here. LSU's Tardy Eason. He started his career at Cincinnati. Wasn't very good at Cincinnati. Was a foul magnet. Really couldn't pass. Turned the ball over. Shooting percentage is not good. His shot is hideous looking. It's like a catapult almost. It's over the outside shoulder, essentially. He's more of a defense-first guy, and I think the Cavs need to think more offense. But, you know, versatile defenders in the NBA with size and strength and athleticism that can guard maybe 3, 4s, and 5s, and he did play some 5. He played mostly 5, to be honest with you, for LSU. So there are questions about, like, what is his best position? What's the best way to maximize him? But I think they're going to be tempted by that package, especially a head coach like J.B. Bickerstaff. That kind of guy next to Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, like, that's really, really exciting from a defensive perspective. And then if you're the Cavs, you hope, like you do with Isaac Okoro and some of these other guys, that the offense is going to come as his game evolves and he gets more physically mature and he works with the player development staff that also worked with Colin Sexton and Jetty Osman and Larry Nance Jr. and Isaac Okoro. So Tardy Eason is another name that I think Cavs fans should watch. In fact, at least one member of the organization that I talked to recently likes Eason the most of the guys that they consider most realistic at number 14.
Wow.
Because he's getting comparisons to Patrick Williams from Florida State. And in 2020, the Cavs really liked Patrick Williams. He just won one pick in front of them, and then they got Isaac Okoro instead. So that type of player is one that appeals to the Cavs front office.
Well, the draft is on June 23rd, so we are about a month away. We'll definitely be able to talk about it a little more. And again, maybe there will be some more clarity as to what's going to happen with this or where the Cavaliers are going to be at that point. Like we said, maybe, you know, at that point there'll be a little more, I wouldn't say final, there will be things that happen that maybe they think are, make them a little more clear for Cleveland at that point.
Yeah. And the other one that I really like, and I know that the Cavs like as well, but they believe internally that he's going to be gone by number 14, is Jang. He's a French swingman. He played in New Zealand. He was very good in the second half of the season for New Zealand. He did not get off to a good start, but he's like 6'10", can shoot, can handle, can pass. Like, we're talking upside and just taking a big swing on somebody who could potentially 3 to 5 years down the road be like a legitimate matchup nightmare at the 3-4 spot. He would be the one. But there are teams drafting in front of the Cavs that might be just willing to take a huge shot on his upside and his overall talent and just the package that he brings and how intriguing it is. So I have a hard time believing that he's going to be available at number 14, especially the way that he finished the past season. But that's somebody that the Cavs would absolutely be interested in if he was available at 14.
All right. Again, the Cavs have options, which is exactly what they need. But I think we've kind of, I mean, if we were playing GM, I think you're right. I think the 14 is probably just best at this point to take a player, and unless a team really wants 14 in a package for a play and package for something else. But you know, if, like I said, it's hard to see where they're going to go when there's such little clarity at this point. You know what I'm saying?
Yep, for sure.
So
there's no doubt about that. And the other thing is, I mean, there are things that the Cavs have to figure out. But there are things that could happen in the NBA, not actually happen, but like speculation, and they could gain more intel around the league in talking to a lot of these teams and agents at the combine and stuff like that, where you look at a situation and say, well, somebody could become available in a trade that we don't think is currently available, right? Or somebody might be willing to take the mid-level exception when it seemed like that guy was going to get $12 or $13 million annually or something along those lines, right? So like, this is a whole off-season map that just starts with the draft, but it obviously intersects with free agency and potential trades.
Right, exactly. And I think Kobe has been really, really, really good at jumping on opportunities and really, really, really good at making sure that, you know, they do vet the waters and they do talk to these teams and they do find maybe guys that they didn't think were going to be available, a la Jared Allen. You know, that's a perfect example. So I have no doubt that will continue to be the case. But like I said, we got about a month till the draft, so we will continue to talk about what's going to happen. Any thoughts on the Eastern Conference, Western Conference finals thus far?
Well, that was a mighty impressive performance by Golden State last night against Dallas. And
I thought you were going to say like that was a mighty. I thought you were going to say like that was a mighty impressive transition or a mighty impress. I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, going into that game against Golden State, I was like, you know, who are the Warriors going to use against Luka? If the Suns couldn't figure out how to guard Luka and they had Mikal Bridges and they had guys capable of switching and things along those lines, who are the Warriors going to use against him? And it was amazing, Hayden, because in the first like 9 minutes of the game, maybe just the first quarter, they threw like so many different looks at him.
Right.
They trapped him. They went box and one. They went zone. They put Wiggins on him. They switched. They hedged. And obviously that's the plan for Golden State moving forward, is to not allow Luka to get comfortable and show different looks. And that's what you have to do against some of the greatest offensive players. But for them to make Luka look so uncomfortable, given how he looked against the Phoenix Suns, I thought that was incredibly impressive by the Golden State Warriors.
Tonight, game two of Boston and Miami, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I think that we'll see what happens with we'll see what happens with Al Horford and Marcus Smart.
Yeah, that's why it's hard to really evaluate what happened in game one of that series. Number one, LeBron has said it over and over and over again, and you know this too, Hayden. Game one is the feel-out game.
Yes.
Beyond that, Boston not having Horford and Smart is so significant to what they want to do both offensively and defensively. So it's hard for me to make judgments based on what I saw in game one, but you know, Jimmy Butler playing at the level that Jimmy Butler is playing at, boy, those are the kinds of guys that the Cavs need and they don't have.
Yeah. If only it were that easy. If yeah, only right. it were that easy to get a guy like that. Exactly.
Yeah.
Tobias Harris over me. Over me. Jimmy Butler. Yeah. Well, look what happens. So, All right. Well, tonight, game two of that series. And, you know, as we continue to go forward, we'll get closer and closer to the draft and closer to getting an idea of who the Cleveland Cavaliers are, you know, looking to draft and looking to add to the team and what direction they're going to go in. So, Chris, anything else before we let you go?
No, man, I think that's about it. It'll be interesting for the next month, following along what the Cavs do and the guys that they bring in for workouts and the guys that they interview and all that kind of stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Well, enjoy this beautiful 70-degree day in Northeast Ohio, 73 degrees I can see right now. The sun is shining, so enjoy it. Enjoy the family, and we will talk soon.
Sounds good, brother.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the One and Gold Talk podcast. Be sure to go to cleveland.com/Cavs to read all of Chris's content, and be sure to click the blue banner at the top of the page. All you got to do is sign up, $3.99 a month, 14-day free trial, and you will get all kinds of insight, analysis, news sent straight to your phone before Twitter or anywhere else from Chris. Again, $3.99 a month sent straight to your phone, 14-day free trial. All you have to do is go to the blue banner, click it, enter your phone number, and you will be good to go. So do that now as we get ready for the 2022 NBA draft. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We will talk soon. Take care.